All right, Thursday Warriors. Man, it's been a crazy day. So, well, this has been nuts. Like, I was covering at our Mills store today, and it was like dead all day till everyone left, and I was by myself, and then it just was busy the rest of the night. It's crazy. But it's good. It was good. So, for those of you who are joining us, you may remember Dennis from, what was that, like about a year ago?
Right? Almost exactly a year ago, yeah.
Yeah. And his book, the first book, Lycan, came out. You can pick it up at your local NDC. Mine is somewhere near me. I finally got around to finishing it and bagged it and put it in a box somewhere, but it's near me somewhere. Don't mind if I'm eating, guys. I literally just got home 5 minutes ago.
no worries.
But yeah, it's going to be a good time. Like, while we're just kind of waiting for people to show up and watch, did you guys see the new Quantum Leap trailer that dropped today?
No.
Dude.
I love me some Quantum Leap.
I was like,
the question is, how many people are going to get upset because it's too woke? Because that seems to be the subject of every major thing going on.
Why? Because the new doctor is Pacific Islander, and his hologram is not only his girlfriend, wife, but is a woman.
So is it supposed to be like just a retelling of the last one, or is it supposed to be its own separate thingamabob?
That's a great question. I heard it was going to be like a in the same universe, but happen later.
Okay.
But from watching the trailer, though, it feels very like it's just like its own separate thing. But I don't know. Like, I'd be okay with that. If we get a Scott Bakula like guest appearance, I'll be even more excited. But it starts next Monday at 10 p.m. on NBC.
Wow.
I was
That's
like
a holy weird time slot, and also very fast after a trailer drops.
you would have thought that it would have been like a month out. Nope, it's a week out.
Wow.
So,
The weird thing
I'm really
is
excited for it though.
The weird thing is it doesn't look quite as like futuristic as the original show. Like the original show like tried to, I mean, granted it was a little goofy, but like it tried to look like it was in the far flung future, whereas now it's just like, yeah, it's pretty much the same.
What, Rainbow Electric Mountain wasn't good enough for you? Because that's like where the whole, like the system that was letting him leap was in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like, I mean, it's got Ernie Hudson in it. Okay.
Yeah. Ernie Hudson's kind of like he's like a doctor in the, because it's set in our present.
Yeah.
Like the dude leaps from 2022.
Yeah.
So Ernie Hudson's like the, why did he do that? Like there's a scene where he's like, why did he leap? And I don't know if that means like, why did he get in there and leap, or why did he leap from one person to the other?
Hmm.
So I don't know if they're using the same ideas that,
so this is technically like the precursor is like what I'm getting at, like, because they did they actually say in original Quantum Leap series what the year is from where he was traveling from?
You know what?
Or is that like all speculation? We gotta look it up.
Let me look.
Because yeah, I love Quantum Leap growing up. And like, the last episode of that show broke me when I was a kid, because it's the most depressing thing ever.
Like where he doesn't actually
ever go like home. Leave. He never goes home. He just
eventually
just leaps until he dies. It's like, oh, okay. And it's in a text box. I mean, granted, he does save Al's marriage by leaping. Yeah. So I guess then eventually he figures out that he could control the leaping and whatnot. But yeah, I loved that show as a kid. It was so crazy.
See, I'm waiting for certain sci-fi reboots for more current sci-fi specials. Like, especially anything on the original sci-fi network.
That's fair.
Not the sci-fi network, as some of my friends like made fun of it for. Like, there's one I love, The Invisible Man from the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Where he's a prisoner and they insert a organism that actually made him invisible.
Okay.
And I loved it. I loved the concept. I loved the, like, all the actors were like bit actors from Broadway and did bit parts in Hollywood, but they made it work. And I really loved it. And if, like all shows from sci-fi, they're like, oh, we're going to cut it. There's no, you know, no end season. They cut it in the middle of the one season. You never hear about it ever again.
So, oh, you know what? I did watch that show.
Yeah, he had the little tattoo. Like, the further he goes invisible, the worse the tattoo got. Mm-hmm. And then he got to a point where he would literally go insane, which was an awesome take on the Invisible Man, original Invisible Man story. So I thought that was brilliant. And they're like, yeah, we're done with it. We don't want to do it anymore. So they just, it just disappeared.
Because I specifically remember Paul Ben Victor being on that show.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
All right. According to Quantum Leap Trivia, Sam leaped in the original series in 1995.
Okay.
Far-flung future of 1995.
Right? So by 1997, we had the giant glowing mountain of electricity that still stored his body that the people that he leaped into inhabited while he was inhabiting theirs, which I always thought was like kind of a cool thing, and they didn't really show it a lot. Except for the one episode where him and Al switched, and then like he like went and out, saw everybody and saw his daughter and all the stuff that he accidentally made while leaping. And then was like trying to help him get home, and he was like, "Oh, you're here. This is weird."
Hmm.
Right.
So it's not so far distant future.
Right. So anyway, so in lieu of talking about comics today, we're just going to like hang out with Dennis, and he's going to talk about his new chapter for Lycan, which I am posting I just put the Kickstarter link in the chat if anyone wants to check it out. I'll be backing the retailer end after the show.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. I mean, like, we sold, I think the staff bought half the stack that came in.
You had told me that.
Like that day. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. Pro tip though for next time.
Okay.
If both covers can have a barcode, that'd be awesome.
So the issue was, so both covers do have a barcode. It was the Kickstarter exclusive covers that I forgot to put the barcode on because it had a specific file. So like if I were to pull out that same cover without the file foil on it, it's got the barcode on the back, but it didn't for the Kickstarter one. So that was just a mistake on my end.
Super weird. Well, yeah, it was still good. A couple guys came out and bought it. It was all right. It was good. Like, people enjoyed it. So
awesome.
So I'll let you tell people about it if they didn't hear about it. You can talk about the Kickstarter, you can share your screen, you can show off the book, whatever you want. I just thought it was a fun fantasy, kind of a good mix between like high fantasy and horror-ish stuff, which is what I liked about it.
Well, you're the first person who's referred to it as fun. As everybody I've talked to is like, the first book is really dark. They're like, it's really, really dark.
Right.
I'm like, yeah.
That's why. Yeah. That's why I like about it.
Well, isn't the whole point of a werewolf to be tragic and dark to begin with?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
What did you expect? Sparkly vampires? Sparkly, you know, we get back into that again? No.
Well, I think it was, well, my buddy who had said that, he loves dark stuff, but I guess he just wasn't anticipating it being quite as dark as it ended up being. But so the series is called Lycan Solomon's Odyssey. It's about the world's first werewolf. And there is, so basically the series is going to be 15 books long. The first book, which came out last year, and my plan is every year to release the Kickstarter in September, because I launch it with Dragon Con, which is sort of where it was reborn. As I had the idea a decade ago, shelved it. And then because I started going to Dragon Con and talking to people, they said, hey, you should probably do this. And I ended up networking through Dragon Con and meeting my first editor through Dragon Con and my current art editor through Dragon Con. So Dragon Con just seems like the most sensible place to launch, you know, the Kickstarters for the book. So every year my plan is to release another Kickstarter. And like I said, the plan is to have 15 books in the series. I have it all mapped out all the way to the last book in the last page of the last book, I should say. So the first book takes place in 8,000 BC, and then each book moves a little bit further on down the timeline. This second book starts right where the first book left off, like same day. And then over the course of the book, it's a few hundred years later, basically. The third book is where you start to get into like Sumeria, Gilgamesh, stuff like that. But for book two, this one really goes into Arabic folklore and mythology and religion. So I was doing research on the book and I found some really interesting stories that I was like, oh, I would love to pull that and sort of twist it and add it to this story, you know, to have Solomon involved. And then they also have some really freaky, amazing monsters that I was like, yes, this will fit perfectly in the story that I'm trying to tell. So, and then this story also introduces magic to the world, so to speak. So this book does a lot of stuff. And it's the same length. It's 72 pages, 60 pages of story with 12 pages of extras. The next few books in the series will probably be a good bit longer. The third script is already written and it's 90 pages without the extras. So it's not, so it's going to be 50% longer. Yeah.
It's a lot.
I have not decided if I'll cut it in half and release it in two chunks. Not quite sure. Cause I have heard, you know, if it's too long, there are issues, you know, with that whole thing. But so far selling the book at cons, nobody seems to really bat an eye at the length or anything like that. So we'll have to see. I haven't decided just yet.
I think if the price is comparable or better, like you feel like you're getting value out of that for the size of it.
Yeah.
I think that that's where people will hold on to it.
Yeah. Well, the plan, so the price of the book was always something I sort of worried about and talked to numerous people. I said, hey, you know, this is the page number. Like, what is a fair price for this? And almost everybody I talked to said $15 was fair for basically 60 pages of story with 12 pages of extras. So I said, okay, that's a good, it's a good mark. So basically I'll do a very similar thing to, you know, the 90 page book, you know, with however many pages of extras it has.
That's awesome. Yeah, I so you would probably just bump it to what, like $20? Maybe 25.
Maybe 25. I don't know. I'd have to really sit down and do the math on it. But yeah, probably 25, I would guess.
Okay. Versus like trimming down the story, because you're like, I imagine you're like, oh, I can't really cut here and there.
So I have a really great writing editor and I'm always like, okay, if I wrote too much, just tell me. And she's like, no, I love everything that you're doing here. Like, in fact, I need a little bit more here. I need a little bit more there, that type of thing. So like it was like 88 and then turned into 90 with edits and whatnot. This book. So for instance, when I first wrote the book in the really crappy novel version that I had written years back before I knew how to write a comic script, this book was only supposed to be like 24 pages or something like that. But then I did more research on, you know, Arabic folklore mythology and stuff like that. I was like, oh, you know, I could put this in the story and I could add this. And then it ended up being the exact same length as the first book. So I was like, okay, well then that works just fine. But the next stories, there's so much I want to tell and expand the world and go into all these different mythologies. The next book, I basically introduce Lovecraftian stuff into the universe a little bit. So there was a lot of stuff I had to tell and show. So it ended up being, you know, 90 pages.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
So I guess like, so I can't remember if this was covered in the first book, but like, so it's the same Solomon though, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So him being a werewolf also makes him immortal?
Yes. Okay. So in the universe that I'm building, and I'm going to get into it later books, probably the second arc of books, so like 10 to 15, there are other werewolves. So like all the werewolves you see in media, like Lon Chaney's the Wolfman, or, you know, the Lycans from Underworld or whatever, all of that technically still exists in the universe. They're just all different. So like only Solomon is a certain way because of how his affliction works. And we get into that more as each book, you know, moves along, trying to explain, you know, why he is the way he is.
So you're talking like tribes, like a tribal type thing where it's, here's a tribe of this kind of werewolf. Because we've seen that in various vampire lore where vampires do it, where there's the vampires that kind of look like Nosferatu. And here's the vampires that look like Edward from Twilight, where they look perfectly normal.
Those all need to die.
Yeah. But I see where you're going with this. Okay. Like, since I wasn't here for the first interview, so I have questions in my head as like most of my early childhood was reading the Universal Monsters and how that world has expanded as I've gotten older. Mm-hmm. Here I am in my 40s and I'm like, holy cow, it went from black and white, blah, I want to suck your blood, or oh, I'm here's a full moon, oh, I'm all hairy and whatnot, you know, to this ever expanding world. And I'm enjoying it. I'm probably more that kind of horror than, you know, my wife is I gotta watch every horror flick ever made from on Tubi. Sure. For free. So you know, oh, there's some weird ones out there, and I'm like, did they use ketchup without watering it down, because it's chunky?
They just want cans of crushed tomato because it's cheaper.
Oh,
like dumping cans of tomato, the chunks like, of it gross.
Too cheap, we gotta go to Walmart. We're gonna buy like, the
we forgot to get the ones without the basil in it, so you can see the little pieces of green.
It burns. It burns.
I can tell you from experience that stuff does burn.
Yeah.
If you shave and then put it on, it burns.
I can't wait till you get to the point where you're in like the 1980s and we get like a werewolf in London, issue. Like that's gonna be just like, because that by far is probably my favorite werewolf movie of all time.
That's most people's favorite werewolf movie. I've been finding it more lately. My favorite werewolf movie has been popping up on some people's lists, but it's usually almost always American Werewolf in London for everybody else. My favorite is Dog Soldiers.
Ooh.
Yeah. I really did.
I think I saw that once.
It was a really good cast. Like,
yeah.
That all like turned like went on to do like bigger and better things. Like, you know, you get your Onion Knight from Game of Thrones and I forget everybody else who's in it, but there's like quite a few like big names for such like a small little, you know, budget movie that I saw on the sci-fi the Sci-Fi channel.
Well, here's a question. Where do you rank The Howling as a werewolf movie in your,
are like movie, like these kind of movies, like part of the research that you do, like to kind of get an idea of like for where some of the other lore may have come from? Because like, obviously, like, you know, some of them are probably based on some kind of original lore.
Mm-hmm. So I haven't watched the movies to research for the books just yet, since it's a ways down the road. Most of what I've been researching is like, okay, you know, like book three deals a lot with Gilgamesh. So it's like, okay, so I, you know, looking up the story of Gilgamesh and trying to see where I can tie things together there. Or as I said, you know, you start to get a little bit HP Lovecraft, and there's specific like elder beings and whatnot that that's involved with. So I did a lot of research for that. And then a lot of the research is also, okay, you know, this is mostly prehistory, so you don't get a whole lot of stuff written down. So it's like, okay, what can we find in terms of, you know, depictions of clothing, you know, societal structures, things like that. So for right now, that's sort of what the research has been. Eventually down the line, and I've seen a fair bit of werewolf movies, so like I already have an idea in my head of, you know, how I would introduce all of that eventually when it pops in. Because so, you know, I have it as a sort of a spectrum where, you know, all the way on the left side of the spectrum, you have the true blood werewolves where they literally just look like wolves. And then all the way on the other side of the spectrum, you have like the Lon Chaney Wolfman, where it's basically a dude with some fur pretty much. And then as you get towards the middle, you get like 50-50 human werewolf. And that's where Solomon falls. He's like dead center, 50-50 human werewolf. And each of the werewolves, you know, will also function like they do in their, you know, film counterparts or TV counterparts, where, you know, sometimes it's a virus, sometimes it's a curse that could be transferred, you know, from bite or to children or whatnot. Solomon's isn't explained really until chapter four, but it doesn't work that way. So he can't give it to anybody else. He can't pass it on to kids. He can't bite somebody and give them lycanthropy that way. He is his own little different thing from everybody else, because later werewolf incarnations, they're basically just further experiments by the bad guy from the first book, like trying to, like, you know, just perfect whatever it is that he's working on. And then he just keeps getting all these different variations, and he's just like, all right, it's fine, let him run off and, you know, murder humanity and all that jazz, cause trouble, that sort of thing. And I do plan on having other monsters as well. I would love to be able to include all the universal monsters in some capacity, because I do, like, that is what originally got me into werewolves, was finding a book about Lon Chaney's The Wolfman in my little kid library in like elementary school. There was a purple orange book.
The orange bounding, like the hardback with the orange.
Mine was purple with like gold lettering from what I remember. But then that was like 30 years ago. But that's how I remember it anyways, is purple with gold lettering. But it was a picture book basically of the movie. And so I would love to be able to include all of the universal monsters some way or some form. And I do plan on having vampires as well. Not the Edward Shiny type of vampires. They'd probably be much more horrifying. As
you want more like the Pee Wee Herman from the Buffy movie.
100%.
I don't know if that's much better, to be fair.
It's still like
slightly better.
To be fair, that is probably my favorite vampire death scene ever. Just
and then technically he's not dead, right? At the end of the movie, he like just like leaves or something. Like he's fine somehow.
Yeah, he just crawls out.
Technically, he's not dead because he's in What We Do in the Shadows. It's the same character.
Yeah.
There you go.
So he's still
alive. Does he have one arm? Does he have his arm ripped off?
Maybe he got a different one. I don't know. I don't remember if he had one arm or not.
But that was like some of the best scenes. Like, and that was actually, I think, one of the first vampire movies I saw in the theater was the, because I saw that thing when it came out. Because I was like, this looks stupid and fun. And my older cousin from Erie was in town, and I think I was like 14 and he was 16 and he could drive. So he drove us downtown to the theater. And I remember coming out of that and being like, that was so much fun. And then like the TV show came on and I was like, this is so much darker. I was like, are they going to do like the Pee Wee Herman death scene? Cause that was awesome. I just love like that scene where his arm gets ripped off. He's like trying to like grab Luke Perry through the sunroof, and they just like hits the tree and he rips his arm.
You know, I haven't seen that movie in forever too, but it was definitely one of my favorite vampire movies just because it was fun.
Yeah. So yeah, but I think Go ahead.
But like getting back to the book, like that started it. That sounds very familiar. What I used to read in elementary school, they were the, I think it was like, it was the black and white horror Universal monsters, and they had an orange backing, kind of Halloween-ish.
Okay.
Of course, it's all that, but it was, of course, Dracula, the Wolfman,
Creature from the Black Lagoon,
Phantom of the Opera,
Frankenstein. Because
technically, he was the part of it.
Yep.
Frankenstein. Who else was in it? There were a couple other minor ones. I think they did like an alien, just maybe, because they had to throw in an alien in there somehow.
Yeah.
And it was like a really bad, awful, dumb alien. But I remember like always like getting them out of the school library, like, and then finally the librarian's like, you know, you could keep these because you've taken them out so often. And I would love to find them again because I've kind of looked around. I have not been able to find that kind of stuff again, just for like sheer nostalgic purposes.
Sure.
And of course, it's like kind of like zoo books, kind of like it's like everybody remembers these, you know. And every time I like talk about it, they're like, yeah, I remember something like that. Cause I think they did it for action, like action monsters or something like that too. That they, I think they put Predator and actual alien in it later on.
Oh, okay.
So it's, but I think those are even rarer because I think those were like early type stuff. But, and I was like, oh, okay.
So I will tell you, I went to search for it on Google just to see what would come up. And as I'm typing Universal Monsters book, it auto-filled to the word orange after that.
Okay, so it is orange.
So it's a Universal Monsters picture book, and the backs are orange.
Yes.
The fronts are not. The backs are orange. The fronts are black and white. Well, I guess they have orange on them too, but it's like, the title is in orange for each one. And you can actually buy a bundle of them for $90 on Etsy.
Huh.
Oh, yeah. $90.
I imagine you can find them on Amazon too.
It looks like there's also King Kong.
Oh, I forgot King Kong.
The Invisible Man.
Yeah, I forgot him too.
I thought there was the Mummy, but I don't see
Mummy
it on here.
Yeah. The Mummy has to be part of it too. Yeah.
I just see this one called the Murder or something.
There's an orange one called Movie Monsters where the whole thing is orange.
That's something different.
Okay.
I don't know.
The ones you were describing before though. That's... The Wolfman one was blue. Blue, purplish blue. And it has like a little orange corner. Hold on. Let me see if I can pull it up here on my laptop so you guys can.
Now that we're getting into deep discussions of childhood nostalgia here. Like we do this at least since I've been on at least once. I'll be like, oh, I remember this thing from when I was a kid. And then we have to look it up. And it's become a thing, part of the podcast now.
it's like we always just like randomly veer off and find something. Be like, oh, look at these. So, actually, let me look specifically for Wolfman.
But so, like the Kickstarter videos that I do, I try and sort of model them a little bit after Lon Chaney's Wolfman. So I do it in black and white, and I have like a cane, typically. Not this last video because I'm chained to a chair. But like suit, tie, you know, slicked back hair, all that jazz. So I try and sort of like pay homage to, you know, the old Lon Chaney Wolfman movie, since that's sort of where the interest sparked from originally.
Have you been to
that the one you had?
Maybe. It's tough to say. So long ago, man.
Well, you can buy it for like $5 on Amazon. Okay.
There you go.
All right. $5.19 in good condition. $4.99 in acceptable.
There we go. Can find anything on Amazon.
Yeah.
True.
Except the physical version of Lycan Solomon's Odyssey, because I won't put it on. Because I hear their print quality is not very great. And they take like 65% anyways. And I'm like, well, if you're going to take 65% and print a bad book, I'd rather not. It's like, I'll put my digital one up there, but I don't want to put my physical one on Amazon.
I'm just going to look to see if anyone actually put it up. Oh, buddy. Oh, there's a Kindle edition for $7.
Yeah, that's the one I have.
Yeah. All right. I was just like, holy shit, did someone actually put the physical book up here and be like, this book sucked, I'm putting it up here.
I hope not.
No. But for $7, look at that. You don't even need to buy the physical book. You can buy it for $7 on Kindle.
So it's $7 on Kindle, or it's $5 on my website.
There you go.
Because Amazon charges you this weird electronic delivery fee for no apparent reason. So I'm like, all right, well, then I guess I'll, because they still take 30%, but then they charge you a delivery fee. And I'm like,
holy crap.
Yeah.
No wonder Jeff Bezos got so much money. Yeah. Holy cow.
So I even put in the book, it's like, if you want the physical version of this, go to my website here and you can just buy it that way. Because on my website, I even have like the first 18 pages you can download for free on like PDF to just check out if it's something you want to see or not. And then if you want to buy the PDF of the full book, then it's $5. And then if it's, right, you know, physical, then it's 15. Unless it's the hard cover version, then it's 20.
All right. So let's look at the Kickstarter so far.
Well, it's actually gone up a couple $100 since the last time I checked.
You know, I put this up earlier, like, I don't know, a half hour ago? I'm mm-hmm. pretty sure it was at like 26 something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and I was like, just like, 27? No shit.
There you go.
I was like, no shit. Look,
I'm doing
that.
Like, I'm trying to do so much, like the thing that's, this project is, for whatever reason, this one is giving me more anxiety than the first book did, like Kickstarter wise. I do not know why, but, so I'm just like constantly trying to do different outreach. Like I'm reaching out to other Kickstarters and like, hey, you want to do cross promotion and stuff like that. So we had Dragon Con this past weekend and I actually got to meet the woman, Oriana, who runs comics and publishing at Kickstarter. She was on my Kickstarter panel. So I got to talk with her for like 45 minutes before we even did the panel. She was lovely to talk to.
Glad to be of help.
Well, my watch apparently really wanted to help you out there. Sorry. Sure,
I appreciate the help. And then
I'm just scrolling through the page while you talk, so as people can check out some of the cover works and stuff. So
that cover, actually, the one that was just up a second
this
ago.
One?
Yep. I actually designed that one. I did it, but I designed it. So I was like, oh, I'm glad he picked it.
That's awesome.
The first cover that was up there, the one with the two ghouls, that one's done by Christian Dabari, who did the two covers for the first book.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, well, I'd like to, you know, see if I could get some other covers just to get a different like style. And so this cover and the last cover are both done by a gentleman named Matthew Sutton, who does really great stuff as well.
This is very Sam Keith-ish to me.
Okay.
Like it reminds me of like a weird Venom cover.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost like a Venom watch. I love this cover though. This is really nice. I really, really like that.
Yeah. I was super happy with how all the covers turned out personally. Like,
I just like that the moon's dripping blood. Like, super cool.
And it's in the background, but dripping blood in the foreground. So it's got some weird little perspective stuff going on.
Right. It's like the moon is that close because the blood is that close.
The art team is the same from the previous books. So
It's
drawn by Sal Denair, who's out of Spain. It's colored by Ezequiel Dominguez, who's out of Argentina. He works for Stone Tower Comics. And then it's lettered by Joel Saavedra, who's also out of Argentina, but I don't think he's affiliated with any particular company or anything like that.
So when you're working with a letterer from someplace that English is not their first language, at least I assume that would be like in Argentina. Mm-hmm. Like, do you ever get like awkward translation stuff, or does he understand the language enough to do it, or is it literally just here's the script, fit it in the box?
So I think he speaks English perfectly, fluently,
okay,
to be honest. But the so the way I have the script set up, you know, it has all the captions and whatnot. And he does a really good job of fitting things in the box because I am kind of wordy at times. But if it is too wordy, he's like, all right, you got too much. Like, there's too many things and you're taken away from the art. Like, cut me out like one or two captions and then I'll, you know, work on it and go back. Every once in a while, like for the most part, there's very few changes I ever have to give Joel in terms of lettering. Like every once in a while, there'll be like a captions directed to the wrong person or something like that, but it's very, very rare. And the book had been, or the first book had been reviewed by a few comic book podcasts, and they all said the same thing, which is they really loved the sound effects and how the captions were laid out. So, you know, I passed that along to him. I was like, hey, everybody seems to really like these. So good job.
Great job on your onomatopoeia, bro. Like, I'm loving it, man. Like even the preview pages, the art's still killer. I really thought that the art worked with the script very well. Mm-hmm. And I agree that the lettering is done in a way where it's not taking away from the art. I definitely there's some onomatopoeia right there. Mm-hmm. What does that say? Sanoosh.
Swoosh.
Oh, swoosh. Yes. Okay. I can't swoosh. Quite read it. I thought it said Sanoosh, which would be funnier.
So I wrote all the sound effects because I do a D&D podcast where I constantly have to do sound effects all the time.
Right.
So I'm sitting here like when I'm writing out like a description of the scene, I'm like, okay, what would that sound like? And then I will make the sound and then I'm like, okay, how do I spell that sound? And then try and do that.
Do you ever record yourself saying the sound? Or do you just listen to the podcast back later and go, okay, now that I liked, how do I onomatopoeia that? How do I make this phonetic?
So mostly while I'm sitting there writing it, I just try and come up with a sound effect. Like I will either do a motion or something like that. And I'll say the sound effect like out loud. And I'm like, does that sound right? No, it doesn't. Like, kakoosh or kakoom or something like that. Like, and I'm like, okay, so how would I spell this or that? And then write it down. And I'm like, nah, it doesn't look quite right. And then like change some letters around. Usually the stuff that's in the podcast, I never have to spell it out. So I never have to worry about any of that. To go back and try and listen through an hour of a podcast to spot sound effects that I liked, I'd rather just figure it out on the spot.
That's also fair. Gabo, really? Yeah, he did The Life After. I know that guy. Yeah, the guy he did that book with, Josh Fialkoff, is he claims himself partially as a Pittsburgher because he lived in Monroeville for like a number of years. Super good dude. I think he's writing like Chicago Blue now or Chicago Med now or something.
Not sure. So
he got out of comics. Anyway.
I met him through networking at Dragon Con. So like when the podcast first started doing Patreon, we wanted to have artists make crazy crap from our show.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a booth I went to, Cloverkin, who does all this fantasy animal armor stuff. And so I spoke with her about, you know, becoming an artist, and then she became one. And then at one point she had mentioned that her significant other worked in the comics industry, and it was Gabo. And Gabo and I talked, and he set me up with a Facebook page where I got my artists from, which it was, I think it's Pairing Writers with Artists. And like, it's a legit page where you have to be vetted before you get into it. And then if you make an ad, it has to be a legit ad. That worked way better than just doing DeviantArt like I had in the past. Like the quality of artists I got was so much better. And I ended up getting all but Joel Saavedra that way. Joel came with my first editor. And then when my first editor and I parted ways, you know, I was like, all right, I'm trying to figure out, you know, who can I get to edit the art and to edit the writing part. And then I said, you know, why don't I just get two different people? I'll just get one person to do the writing part and one person to do the art part. Reached out to Gabo and he was just like, yeah, I'll do it. I'll do the art.
That's
stuff.
Awesome.
So he and I collaborate on all the pages. So like first we'll get the sketches in, and then, you know, it'll go through me, then it'll go through him, and then, you know, we'll work through that. And then again, when it's fully drawn, and then again, when it's colored, and then again, when it's lettered. So he's super, super helpful in terms of that. And then I have another person, Steph, who works with me on the writing editing.
Mm.
And she's an English teacher and does a whole lot of like Shakespearean plays. So she gets she deals a lot of like screenplays where you have to describe the scene.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, all that stuff. So,
wow, so that probably translates very well.
Yeah.
I just want to point out this stupid, awesome tier, right? So for $500, you get a, so I assume that like, the retailer is only the one retailer tier, right? And I have a question about that.
There are two retailer tiers.
All right, hold on. Let me go back. So
there's a five book retailer and a 20 book. Yep. There's one that's up higher for like 100 something.
Oh, there it is.
45. That's what it is. Okay. Yeah, for five books.
Well, you're probably gonna get this one out of me, the 230. my question on this one is, do we get to choose the t-shirt sizes, or do you just send like one of
you tell me whatever t-shirt you saw? Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Because
then the other thing is that poster, the one with the ghouls and the werewolf. You give me whatever logo you want me to put on there, and I'll put your store logo on it.
Oh, nice.
So you can hang it in the shop.
There you go.
Sweet. So, but I just want to point out how ridiculously awesome this is. So you get a shirt, you get the auto commentary, you get an enamel pin, which is awesome, an audio play of book. So that's like a just kind of like a, like, you're just going to like read the book basically, like,
no. So like I'm going to do
an audiobook version.
It's an audiobook version, but with like full voice acting, sound effects, ambient noise, stuff like that. Cause I mean, I'm a podcaster. So, and I do a lot of narration, and I do a lot of, I do a lot of voiceover work, but it's mostly for corporate crap. But I mean, I also do, you know, that sort of thing. And then I know a bunch of other voiceover artists that are just like, let me help with that. My writing editor, Steph, she does a million different podcasts, and she does, you know, Shakespeare and all that stuff. So she has plenty of acting experience. So I have a whole litany of people I can hit up for that. So yeah, the plan is to do, you know, full narrated, voice acted version of the book. And I'll probably even give like two different versions where it'll, you know, remember when we were kids and you'd read one of those books where you press the button and say page one.
Yeah.
And then go. So I'll probably do one version where I have the page numbers so they know where it is, and then one where it just goes and doesn't say, you know,
nice
pages.
That's awesome. Like that. So then you get the hardcover upgrade, three prints, which are all three covers, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then the poster that you were talking about, like that the stores can get.
Yeah, it's the one that's up at the top there.
So the 4x6 mini print, is that the thing that's beside that too?
Yeah, it's a little cute werewolf that's ripping a person apart.
Neat. I kind of like that. physical copy. So you get a hardcover and a soft cover.
So the physical copy of the book, then, so the hardcover upgrade just means that the physical copy you got upgraded it to a hardcover.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I was like, you get both? That's kind of cool. PDF of the book. You get your name in the thank yous, right? Mm-hmm. That's the thank you pages. And then you get a fucking jersey. Like, that is so cool.
So my plan is every Kickstarter to have a specific jersey that's themed to each of the books. So the first book had a jersey level, and it was black and red and with like white text, and only a couple people got it. But they all love that jersey. They're like, oh my gosh, it's so comfortable. And like they're wearing it around all the time. And my one friend who did not back at this tier, but she helps me at all my conventions for free. She was like, can I get a jersey? I was like, yeah, I'll get you a jersey. It's fine. So she wears it at all of our conventions too.
I think you sold John on the jersey there. So
I'll be honest.
He may be getting stuff for the store, and then this is going to be his personal.
I'll be honest.
He's a sucker for hockey jersey.
I just bought a new guitar, so I can't really spend that kind of cash right now. Okay. So I'll just
luckily
do the
it doesn't bill you till the end of the month. So,
well, that's also fair. So you get the slip cover. The slip cover's on the hard cover, right?
Yeah,
I assume. Yeah, and then the CFB button as well, and then a death in the book. So like, you're actually gonna draw their face on someone who dies.
Yeah. So the person down there is my buddy Charles McFall, who backed at the level, and so I said, you know, I want a bunch of pictures of you around a campfire because I already had it in my head where I was gonna kill him. So I was like, give me a bunch of pictures at different angles, and so the page that he dies on, and you'll get a page, like an 11 by 17 print of the page that I kill you on. And then I'll sign it as well. But yeah, so that's where he dies. So there he is sitting next to the fire, and then he gets his head bitten off.
That's awesome. This is the kind of cool shit I think more people need to do when they do Kickstarters. But that is super, super awesome. We're probably going to do this one, and I will talk to make sure that sure. Tim and Justin both get a t-shirt in their size. Sure. What I was going to say, though, is I'm pretty sure I saw someone at Heroes, maybe, with your jersey on. And I was like, I'm pretty sure I know that book. Like,
maybe. I don't know if no. Shannon was at Heroes or not. I don't think so. But I don't know. When was Heroes?
It was mid June.
Nah, because I didn't even get the books yet till till end of June. So, okay. And then the person who it would have been wouldn't have had it till the end of August. So,
okay, because I was like, man, like I either that or I saw somebody, maybe they had a pin or something. Maybe. I don't know. Because I just remember being like, is that the Lycan from Dennis's book? Like, I'm pretty sure that is shit. It might have just been another person that backed the book that happened to be there too.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I actually met a couple. So now that I started doing conventions, I have met a couple of people who said they were at that particular the Heroes Con.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good show. Very good show.
That's what I heard. That's what I heard.
And hopefully, fingers crossed, next week I will have a solidified date for Three Rivers for 2023.
Okay.
And you can come over to the better side of the state. I mean, the western side of the state.
I mean, I'm dead center, so it barely takes anything to, you know, drift.
That's true. You're only, what, like 4.5 hours versus three. Six? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Then you're dead. You are dead center between the two.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, you can come on over and hang out with us.
Yeah.
And,
I used to live in Pittsburgh for a little bit.
There you go.
I lived up on Mount Washington for a little while I went to the no longer in existence Art Institute of Pittsburgh.
There you go, alumni right here.
So my one friend who comes with me to cons, she goes to Three Rivers, I believe. Her name's Emily Swan. I don't know if you.
I love Emily Swan. Hold on. See that Marvel's the one under the Green Lantern, where it's like the Marvel ladies. That's hers.
Nice. So the 4x6 print of the cute little werewolf, that's Emily Swan's art. So
nice. Emily's awesome. I love her. She is great people. Mm-hmm. I love her art. It's fantastic. Yep. I remember she posted that Marvels on social media somewhere. And I was like, you need to save me one of these for next time I see you. And then I think it was like 6 months later. She was like, she's there. She sees me. She's like, hold on, like runs over to her booth and comes back. She's like, look, like, yes. So
that sounds like Emily.
Yeah. I'll probably see her at Baltimore.
Will also be at Baltimore.
Awesome, man.
Actually, Emily and I will be splitting a table at Baltimore. So if you see Emily, you're going to see me.
There you go. Awesome. I'll make sure I bring my book with me then and maybe sign it. So awesome. I will be rolling around in either a Three Rivers shirt or an NDC. New Dimension Comic shirt. Okay. So you'll be easily able to spot me. So
awesome. Yeah, my plan was to sign up for Three Rivers next year. It was wonky trying to sign up for cons this year just because I didn't know when I was going to get the books because the shipping delays were so crazy. So I didn't start going to conventions until the first weekend in August. So I did three cons in August and then Dragon Con, and then I got Erie coming up in a couple weeks, and then
I'm gonna be there on Sunday.
Well, then I will see you on Sunday, because awesome. Emily and I are also splitting a table at Erie.
I've never been there.
Neither have I.
I hear a lot of good things. We have a lot of friends that sit up there, and I wanted to go up earlier. I ended up having to cover some stores for some people that week, but I was like, I'm gonna make it work. So I'm going up Saturday night, hanging out with some friends in Edinburgh, just south of there, and then going to Erie for the day. So I will definitely see you there. And you know, depending on how crazy it gets, and I don't know what time it ends on Saturday, probably 5, but 5 or 6, one of the two.
We're between 5 and 7, I think. It's hard to keep track. They always end but like 5 or 7, it seems like.
Yeah.
Sunday ends at 5, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Well, if you guys aren't too much in a hurry, we can grab dinner or something. It'll be.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, if it's on Sunday, it'll depend, because that's a 6-hour drive home.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, if you're not in a hurry. Yeah.
Because my friend Shannon, who is going up with me, I took off half the next day because I was like, nope, not dealing with this. Like, I'm going to drive 6 hours and then have to wake up early. I was like, no. We're just taking the first half of the day off. I don't think she has quite the same luxury. So I think it's going to be load everything up and drive south as fast, because she lives in DC. So then she has to drive another hour and a half.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, as you're coming up, if you're coming up Friday afternoon,
I'm coming up Thursday.
Oh, you're going to go up Thursday for setup.
Yeah.
Oh. Never mind. I'll be in Butler. I was gonna say I was in Cranberry, I'd be like, stop there and we'll grab dinner, but day early.
That's how it always ends up. But yeah, so I mean, we'll play it by ear. I have no idea what's gonna happen. This will be my first 3-day con. I've done lots of 2-day cons. I have my first 1-day con at the end of the month in Lehigh Valley.
I have a buddy that's starting one in State College. It's going to be in February. So I'll make sure.
My second con that I went to was up in Wellsboro, and it was the first time they ever did that con.
I heard that show was great.
It went great. Yeah. I did way better at that convention than I did at the Big Lick Comic Con in Roanoke, Virginia. Like I did good at that con, but like Wellsboro, I made table cost in 30 minutes.
Wow. I
was there for 2 days. Nice. So it was just like, cause it was only $50 for a table. So it was just it's like a couple books, boom, done.
Yeah. Well, you need like 2 hours at our show then. So
that's fine. So it was funny, cause I've done 3 conventions, and then I kind of snuck into Dragon Con a little bit and sold books. And the first 2 conventions went really well. And then the third one I did was Maryland Pop and Horror Con, where the table was $200, barely broke $100.
Wow. And
most vendors didn't make money. The guy next to me made $10 on a $200 table, because nobody, like, the only stuff people were buying were movie prints and like horror clothes. So if you had a booth where you were selling either one of those things, you're doing fine. But most of the other vendors were not doing that. So
it was more like a movie collectible pop culture-y thing versus like check out new creator owned stuff.
Yeah, it seemed that way. And the attendance wasn't nearly what we were told it was going to be. And apparently a lot of vendors went and complained to the ownership afterwards. And they were like, well, I mean, next year we're going to make the table $250. So I was like, yeah, I think I'll just stick with my local con. Cause we had a horror con in Gettysburg at the same time. So I was like, yeah, maybe I'll try that one next year. I don't know. We'll see.
It's not bad. It's not bad. Yeah. So I don't often get out your way, but when I do, I will let you know. So
yeah. Let me know.
But yeah, hopefully we'll have the dates for Three Rivers set. It's to be honest, currently the problem is the convention center doesn't have enough in-house tables and chairs to facilitate us plus what's already scheduled.
Okay.
So we're trying to find a decorator that'll do it for not astronomical prices, which is what we're kind of running into. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to work out a way to make it work for the dates we want, And if not, then we're going to try that list for other stuff. But
okay.
But yeah, hopefully we'll have everything up. But I really want to have it up by the end of the month for sure. Like, because I want to roll into New York and Baltimore with a date and be like, boom, here you go.
Yeah.
Da-da-da. So.
And when is that typically? Like around what month?
So if everything goes to plan and we can get the same weekend we did last year, it'll be the first weekend of June. Okay. Historically, it's been in like the end of May, second half of May. But it worked really well because it's also Pittsburgh Art Fest and Pride weekend as well. So basically downtown is just a giant festival.
Sure.
And people float in and out and people go down to Arts Festival and go, oh, there's no comics here. And then people go, but there's comics over at the convention center. And then they just walk the block and a half over and then they buy their ticket and come in and hang out. Like, we had people buying tickets an hour before close both days. And we ended up with like a little over 4,000 people total, like individual tickets, not turnstile.
Is if it 2 days or three?
Just two, Saturday, okay, Sunday.
The 3 day ones are tough because, like, I work a 40 hour week job and I literally pool all of my PTO to burn it all in September because I am focused on Kickstarter and I've got Dragon Con at the front. I've got the only vacation I take of the year, which is the Louder Than Life Music Festival at the end. And then in the middle, it's just all the Kickstarter stuff. So I literally burn it all that month. So then Con saying like, oh, you know, it's on Friday too. It's like, ah, crap baskets. Okay.
Yeah. Well, we usually do a load in on Friday.
That's fine.
But you can also do it Saturday morning.
Yeah.
But it's a good time. You can ask Emily how she did last time. I don't know many people that didn't do well. I know we had vendors, cause Justin actually is on my convention staff. We had vendors Saturday night, like being like, can we sign up for next year?
So, awesome.
Yeah. So it was good. And, it was awesome. We brought in like Rick Leonardi and Howard Chaykin, last year. So, or cool. This year, I guess currently, both had a blast. I thought they were great people to hang out with. I ended up talking to Chaykin in the lobby for couple hours after the show, so
it's awesome.
But yeah, man,
I'll definitely be coming to that one next year, especially if it's 2 days. Like, I could definitely make that.
Cool. Well, we would love to have you. So,
well, I appreciate it. Everyone, keep well. So at Dragon Con, they Matt Sutton, the person who did the covers, and Cloverkin, who's Gabbo's wife, are constantly trying to get me to like, and Gabbo are trying to get me to get a booth at Dragon Con. And I'm like, listen, I do like 10 panels. And I run around like a chicken with my head cut off. I'm like, I don't know if it's really like a good fit for me to, you know, come down and do the vendor hall for like 4 straight days while also doing all that stuff. Cause like, I don't want to make somebody sit at my table for all the time that I'm gone and all that jazz. But this past year, they invited me to this, like, they call it Fantasy Gather Writers Meet and Greet, which all it is it's a bunch of writers in a table or in a room. They each have tables and then people can come in and buy books and meet the writers. So I was at my own little table with my comic and I literally sold way more books in the 3 hours than I did at the entire 2 days of the Poppin' HorrorCon. Like, I sold a pretty decent amount of books for not being in the right crowd. Like, they were not people coming in there to shop for comics. I was the only person there with a graphic novel. Everybody else, they're all like big, thick books about, you know, sci-fi and fantasy and all that jazz. So I was like, all right, well, you know, maybe it might be a good idea to, you know, get a booth at Dragon Con some year when I drive down because I'm not shipping all those boxes of books down there.
Oh, yeah. I know a couple of people that sit up at Dragon Con. They always say they do very well. So most of them are artists. Like Sora Sung was there over this weekend and like just watching her social media feed of all the sketches and stuff she did was just insane.
Yeah.
Like, she's great. She does her own book called Aurora. And she also has one called Carnal Confessions as well. So,
okay.
But, super cool. She's great. She's done work for multiple publishers. She worked with Brian Polito. Does a lot of Lady Death
stuff. I literally just reached out to him today.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hey, Because I was reaching out to Kickstarters, other Kickstarters, and he has one going right now. I was like, I already know this is going to be like a big no. But I was like, hey, do you guys do? I was like, I love, you know, you do all this information for, you know, different cons, and I pull a lot of ideas for like my rewards from your stuff. It's like, do you guys do cross promotion all? And they're like, no, we don't do that. But thank you for the kind. I was like, yeah, I figured you're pulling in half a mil. I was like, you don't need to do any cross promotion.
He's one of the first guys to start doing Kickstarter when it first popped up. Because I remember signing up for his first Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And I had the, was it his pack was similar to yours where the rewards were boom. I didn't go too high. Sure. I was in the middle, and I think I got like the hardbound with, he set like spooky glow in the dark toys and stuff. Mm-hmm. That, kind of go off with it, but
yeah, his stretch goals. So like, I didn't know what to do with stretch goals the first time around, so I was really looking at a bunch of his different projects to see what he did for stretch goals. So I made them for the current project, and I technically have them all the way up to $100,000. Will we make that? No, probably not, but I wanted to have it up there just in case. And but like, mine are spread apart by like $2,000-$3,000 a piece. His are spread apart like $5,000-$10,000. That's where you get the next one, because he's going up to like $1 million. He basically just took, I took his and just shrunk it down.
Just cut a zero off each one.
Exactly, yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. He like is constantly running Kickstarters. It's awesome. Like, I'm glad that it works for a lot of people. I know some people that it hasn't worked out for, but most of the people I know, it has worked out for. And, you know, I enjoy it. I like backing it. I like, you know, when it comes in the mail, like, you know, being like, oh, I'm going to do this. Like, I think when I did the Sora one, I think I actually did, because it was my personal one, I think I did an unboxing of it on the show.
Oh, okay.
And actually, I backed the Amanda Connor naughty book, like the one where she's just like drawing a bunch of comic characters in like not so flattering things, and being naughty. And I'm totally gonna do that as an unboxing video when it comes in, like on this podcast. It's gonna be an episode. It's gonna be part of it. It's gonna be hilarious.
Oh boy!
Awesome. So.
I love it. I don't do it with the retailer ones because they always go to the store, and then I'm like, oh, I'm pretty sure this is a retailer one. Which one is it? Then I open it up. I'm like, oh, sweet, you know. But it's not really as exciting to do online because I'm like, oh, look at these 10 books, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Now we got to figure out which stores get them, and then the staff buys like half of them before they even go out. And I'm like, all right.
Well, that's why I was trying to, you know, figure out what would be good to add into, you know, retailer tiers, to try and entice retailers. So it's like, oh, you know, t-shirts at cost, a poster at cost, you know, bookmarks at cost, like, you know, just trying to make things like, you know, to give like more promotional stuff that you guys could either sell or give out, or, you know, things like that.
It's, you know, marketing. It's easy. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then, and well, so one of the hard parts I've experience with the book series is trying to sell it to comic shops. I called every comic shop, not every New Dimension location, but like, I figure, you know, if it's one name of a store, talk to
you only
person.
Need to talk to me. It's
yeah,
fine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But like, I called every other like shop, and like of the 100-ish shops, like 30 of them did indie stuff. And then of the 30, they're just like, yeah, like it's a really cool book, but we just think it's too expensive for, you know, an unknown that nobody knows anything about. You know, they'd rather buy 3 Spider-Man or 3 Iron Man or, you know, something like that, as opposed to one $15 book. I'm like, that's fair, I guess. So I haven't had very much luck selling it in retail. At the Wellsboro Con, there was a shop that I was talking to, and they were like, yeah, you should make your books 18 pages long and then have covers specific to each comic book shop. I was like, oh, you mean like a comic shop exclusive? He goes, no. Every shop has their own exclusive cover. I was like, I don't know what universe you live in, but I'm already in the hole. I don't need to put myself in the hole deeper.
Hey, man, at least you're not Image Comics. Like, you should see their what you have to order in order to get a exclusive. Like, oh, it's... it's a lot of hoops.
Yeah.
A lot of hoops.
No, yeah. I'm like, I'm happy, you know, to work with retailers however they want. If they want to put the book in, you know, stores, if they want to buy like three copies and do consignment, you know, whatever, that's fine by me. You know, with the Kickstarter stuff, it's a little more complicated because it's the one time that it's not consignment because they're paying up front. So it's, I guess it's a little harder to get retailers involved that way. But, you know, it's just one of those things where I'm just trying to come up with different strategies to try and, you know, fund the Kickstarter. So, and I want to support, you know, comic shops like my local shop. They always back, and then we do a signing. We picked the worst possible day to do a signing this year, but it was fine. We did it on bike week because we forgot what weekend it was, and nobody goes into town on bike week.
No. Oh, is it like bike the city day type thing?
It's
like
motorcycle week.
Oh, so like, oh.
Nobody goes into downtown on bike week.
Yeah. Oh my.
I did a signing and my friend showed up 3 hours before it started. And she's just like, I'm just coming to get the book now before the bikes show up. And just ran off. I was like, well, my signing's not for another 3 hours. She's like, yeah, I don't want to be here during bike week. It's like, all right.
Just sign my book. Sign my book. Yeah, that's, I could see that.
I was like, oh, yeah, that was probably not not great planning. Okay, we'll know that for next time. I totally forgot what weekend it was because I always avoid town that weekend. So I just forgot. Yeah. I was like, oh, oops.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. As a retailer, I appreciate any extra marketing materials. Like, you know, you're still getting it at a pretty good price and you get the extra marketing materials. So, like, that helps. And I also appreciate it when it's in like a, for us it's good because when it's in like a 10 book chunk, because I have six stores, I can split that out pretty decently.
Yeah.
But like when it's like your one retailer tier would be like say 25 books, right?
Yeah.
If I was a single shop, there's no way in hell I would do that.
Well, like, yeah,
I mean, if you had a retailer tier that was like, I don't know, five, like it was half that, I bet you would get some more like so retailers
The low retailer level is five books.
Right. No, I meant like,
oh,
like in general, like
oh, in general,
more okay, Kickstarter gotcha. People would sure. do that. Like for the smaller guys, I think that would be good. Like it chains easier. Like I said, we can break it up and it's like, okay, yeah, sure, we can do that. But, you know, the other thing is, like, some people, when they solicit their Kickstarter to shops, they don't include a PDF. Mm-hmm. They don't show off the book at all. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't know how to market the book.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the problem. Like, you guys, like, you did a very great job with it. And... like I think that you do a very excellent job of making sure people understand what they're actually getting. But when you're like when I get the email, it's like, hey, I made this comic, it's on Kickstarter, can you check it out? Here's the link. And that's literally all it is.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I'm not even gonna look at this.
I made a point to call first to see if it's even anything that they do. Like if it's a lot of comic shops I called, they said like to sell the first book even, or even do the Kickstarter. Like if you're not through Diamond, we don't care. We don't do anything indie. So it's like, okay. Mm-hmm. So then I know don't bother sending them an email with the PDF because they have no interest in it. And then if they do say, you know, I you know, give them the elevator pitch or whatever. And I say, you know, here's what, you know, what the deal is. I'd be happy to send you a PDF of the book, even if it's like 18 page sample or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Usually if they're interested, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, here's my email. And a lot of times I'll never hear back from the email, even with a follow-up or, you know, whatnot. I think I had called comic shops in July and I heard back from one of them last month, like at the end of the month. I was like, okay, wow. I forgot that I even sent you an email because it's been so long. But yeah, so I just wanted to try and have transparency because I hate tooting my own horn, I'm too self-deprecating for that, but I feel like, you know, if I got the book in front of somebody and they actually read it, like I think it's a high quality book that is, you know, worthy of being on a shelf. It's just a matter of, you know, finding, you know, somebody who's willing to put it on the shelf.
Right. No, that's good. Yeah. And you know, most of our stores are larger than the typical store. Like, you know, going to every other store in Pittsburgh to like drop off flyers and stuff and hang out with some of the other shop owners that I know, like, you know, and you know, I don't say this as being like elitist, but we have a lot more space than they do. Sure. So that's why we carry more indie stuff. Mm-hmm. But I totally get like the, you know, I totally can see the side of like, we're only going to carry what's in Diamond. We're only going to like, you know, we're going to focus on Marvel and DC because it's like if you're there, if your margin is that small and you're like the only dude there, like you need to make as much money as possible. You can't take a lot of risk. I get that.
And you don't have the shelf space.
Right. Yeah. So it's not worth buying it if you can't, if it's just going to be hidden among everybody else. Right?
I never take it personal if they say no. It's just like, okay, that's fine. Thanks. Have a great day. You know.
Yeah. Never recalling you again.
I have a spreadsheet. I mark them green or yellow or red. It's fine.
So, but yeah, I love, like, I don't read a lot of Big Two anymore. Like, I read a lot more indie stuff anyway. So for me, like doing this kind of stuff with partnering up with Kickstarters is a lot more fun. And it gets new blood out there. And, you know, who knows, like maybe you do our Three River show and one of the publishers that are there picks it up and you end up blowing up and becoming the next like Colin Bunn, you know, because he does a lot of horror stuff. You know,
What's funny, I guess, is so the next step of me trying to do outreach. So I did a panel at Dragon Con for Kickstarter. And do you know who Gonzo is?
Mm-mm.
He does like luchador comics. His Kickstarters typically bring in like 40, 50 grand or something like that. I can't remember the other guy's name. He does White Widow.
I know him.
He says his usually generate like somewhere between $100,000 and $500,000 for Kickstarter or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all saying
Jamie Tindall, I think his name is.
Maybe.
Right.
I'm terrible with names. And then there was another woman on the panel who I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but they were all talking about, you know, they'd be more than happy to do cross promo, like, or even like just give shout outs. You just have to reach out to them. So like the next stage is like trying to reach out to, you know, comic artists or comic writers and be like, hey, here's the project I'm working on. Would you be willing to give it a shout out? You know, that type of thing, which is always weird to me to like cold, you know, reach out to people that way. But I have a buddy who's friends with Philip Kennedy Johnson. And he was like, my buddy is very, very picky when it comes to comics. And I was wondering what he was going to think about the book. And he loved the book. He's the one who said it might be a little even too dark for him. But he was just like, I want to send a copy to Philip Kennedy Johnson. And then he showed me the text message. Philip's like, yeah, you know, send me a book. So, you know, he's going to read it. And if he likes it, you know, says something, you know, somewhere, you know, you never know what happens. So it's one of those things where it's just like networking.
I mean, that's the name of the game, man.
So it's a lot easier than it used to be back in the day, you know, in the 80s and the 90s, where it's like you really had to grind the gears, and you know, indies were persona non grata, you know, where, you know, only that Image kind of broke that for, but like some of my favorites are like the old school indie stuff. Like I have the original Crow series, and that's
awesome.
That's probably like the indie book that a lot of creators probably want to model that, where it's like, it's still indie. But the name screen is like out there, you know, maybe your book will be the next werewolf movie we'll see in Hollywood. We don't know, you know.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
But that's not even really why.
Get the female lead that looks like Kate Beckinsale.
There you go.
You know, we're all down for that.
The because one of the things that indie creators always tell me is like, don't get into this gig if you're trying to make money. And I'm like, yeah, it's not really what I'm trying to do. I was like, if I break even, I'm happy. I just like telling stories, and I just like to share stories. So like, And some people said, hey, are you going to do more comics? I was like, yeah, if my book ever starts like paying for itself, then yes, I'll start doing other books. I was like, I'm not going to keep sinking myself deeper and deeper into the hole for now other series on top of, you know, this series. I was like, wait. One way or another, these books are going to happen. Like, I'm too stubborn to not. Like, the 15 books, they're going to happen. Whether or not I do other books, that's, that all depends on whether or not these pay for themselves. But these are going to happen one way or another.
Spoken like a true artist. Sure. I mean, I grew up a musician. Like, I wanted to be in a rock band my whole life. And I always said, like, I am here to make music and have fun. And if I make money, cool. Obviously, that didn't pan out very well. And now I'm in comics, which is just, you know, it's like a lateral move, I guess.
but you do what you want.
Yeah. But, you know, but that's really, I always thought that was the best sign of a good artist was that you weren't in it for the money. You were in it to share something. And move people one way or the other. And that's just, and a lot of the best writers, artists, creators, musicians, poets, and like however you define your art, like that is the thing that moves the needle. And I think that's another reason why I like to back guys like you on Kickstarter, because that is really the thing. Like, you can kind of tell who's in it to just try to make a money grab and who's not. And, we are here to help share that experience with people. So
I appreciate
glad
it.
Glad to help. So, all right. If you want to do one last pitch and then we'll wrap this up.
Sure.
Go for it.
So Lycan Solomon's Odyssey Chapter 2 is live on Kickstarter right now. We're just over a third of the way funded with about 3 weeks left to go. This is the second chapter in the story of the world's first werewolf and goes into a lot of like really crazy Arabic mythologies and folklores and really messed up monsters that fit within, you know, that universe. And we also discover magic as we transition further on into the timeline for the world's first werewolf. So if you'd like to check it out, head over to www.lycanbook.com. That's LYCANbook.com to check it out, or just search for Lycan Solomon's Odyssey Chapter 2 on Kickstarter. And that'll run till October 2nd.
Cool. Well, it was great having you back on the show. And
thank you so much. Always fun being
glad on. You can make it.
I'll see you again probably in another year.
Well, no, I'll see you in Erie.
Well, I'll see you at least. At the very least, I'll see you in another year. Like sooner, that's fine too. But yeah, I'll see you in person definitely way sooner.
If I can remember, I'll try to sneak some of this year's convention beer in with me so you can take some home with you. So
okay,
but
down for that.
All right, thank you, Thursday Warriors. We'll catch you next week, where I may do the show from our Butler store. Because I have to work in Butler all day Thursday. So it'll be fun either way. But thanks everybody for watching. We will catch you later.